And now, your local forecast.
And welcome back to the forecast. My name is M4 Sonic. I'm joined today by my co-host, Chief Street. How are you?
Good, man. How are you?
Very good. Actually, well, I'm good, but we're going to be talking about burnouts because I think currently I am burnt out. We'll get into that shortly. Today's episode is about some launch pad, talking about fatigue, burnout, how to address it, how to know when you've got it, and just some other industry stuff about Hollywood, the union strikes currently. I don't know a huge amount about it, but I feel like there's a direct correlation to what's happening in Hollywood right now and what happens in the music industry because I've been both sides of it. So
100%. That's why I can't wait to bring it up and trying to get you to kind of link them together a bit.
Yeah.
I've done some brief research on it. I'm no expert, but I've got a little bit to talk about.
I don't know. You are the stats man. We're definitely integrating stats now into the podcast because Chief Street has gone viral on TikTok and your Instagram. When we say viral, like in terms of correlation towards your following,
yeah,
these videos have done really well. And they're about what we discussed on the podcast about Taylor Swift, which is just fascinating. So a little bit of context, if you missed the episode, Chief laid out some stats about how much Taylor Swift and her team are making from the tour in something astronomical. What was the total?
I think it was about, in Australia, it's about $137 million just in ticket sales. But that's the thing, they're all assumptions. And I actually stopped looking at all the comments and things like that. I couldn't handle it. Although I found the whole thing very interesting to see and feel what it's like for clips to blow up. Now I've learned, I feel like I've learned a lot about the internet and how content is being pushed at the moment. Yep. So on Instagram, about 30K plays, you know, my Instagram has 850 followers. So I've gained about 15 over this clip. And then about 40,000 plays on TikTok.
Wow.
And what I've noticed, Instagram is just purely views, not a lot of engagement. Plenty of likes, not many comments. And I feel like the followers I've got as well are not genuine, as in they're not going to like me for my music. I don't know if they expect more clips like that, which they will kind of get, but I'm not going to talk about Taylor Swift again. And then TikTok has been very much high view count, but really high engagement too. The comment sections go off, man.
So you're starting to see what I've been saying about TikTok and just the way social media is being consumed right now.
Mm-hmm.
Videos and content can go viral, but not the artists.
Yeah, no one gives a shit about me as Chief Street music
unless
producer.
Unless you kept doing, maybe that's your thing. Like I know there's a guy on TikTok and all he does is recaps of the world news and it's great. You know, I follow because I'm interested in what he's talking about.
Yep.
Couldn't care less about their brand.
Yeah, well I found it just a good bridge between, you know, making the podcast kind of relevant, getting good clips that might do well on the internet and hopefully trying to like migrate that audience into this.
Yeah. This is effectively going to be a pretty general, like, I mean, we're talking about Hollywood today, but it's a general scope into the music industry and the behind the scenes. I just don't know how many other artists are vulnerable enough to even allow people into, you know, backstage because I think everybody's trying to upkeep this, you know, vanity profile of I've made it.
The persona.
And I'm not even sure if they know what making it is. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and that's been really bad for people's mental health. So I think this is going to be good. I think as we develop, obviously we've got a new studio. That's another update. It was the film studio is finally done.
Mm-hmm.
We've just got a bit of gear to load in. But otherwise I think in the coming weeks we'll be bumping up.
That's real exciting. I can't wait to be in there. It's going to be a different vibe. It's funny, like I feel really comfortable in here now.
Yeah.
And then we're going to go into this big, big room.
We changed the lighting up for those watching at home. We changed the lighting up a little bit today.
Mm.
And if you are watching, you're going to see some updated merch. So at the end of last episode, Luke was here and we had a gift for you and we opened up the merch and they didn't use the vector graphic that we sent them. They used the email signature.
I can't believe that, man. How unprofessional. Yeah. Really? Like to pull out of a email signature? So like did you read or look at attachments?
The reason we wanted to get this merch done in such a quick time frame, like we don't normally expect people to turn around merch in 1 week, but we had an Ableton event on, was it Sunday?
Yeah, Sunday night.
Just life's a blur. Like, I don't even know what day it is today. But that was awesome. And we needed some merch because the crew was helping, you know, assist with the night and it would be cool to just all rock up and merch. So we got these guys to make our merch, but they obviously rushed it. The first time we got t-shirts, they printed the logo upside down.
Wow. That's even worse than what happened this time.
And then this time around, they had our email signature. printed. But we've got a new merch. So if you're watching, you can see that. It looks kind of cool. Thanks, Chief. You didn't have to rep it today, but I appreciate it.
The dad merch. I love it.
It's like corporate, slick, and comfy.
Yeah, I think it's a good balance. And I'm still trying to figure out how to rock the collar here, but I think I'm going to do it this way for now. We've got the
whatever makes you comfortable, mate. Down.
Yeah.
So the Ableton event, that went really well. So we had a select handful of industry people come along, and Ramsey from Melbourne flew across with the Push 3. So this is Ableton's latest push. And what did you think? I thought it was pretty phenomenal.
I couldn't believe how powerful it was, to be honest. I am not a hardware guy, so any hardware is always really kind of impressive to me and I get excited by it. But I didn't realize it's Ableton in a box.
Yeah.
Plus the freedom to just do all these sampling tricks and manipulation with sound and layering and stuff. I always get scared of the learning curve, but it feels like you could have a lot of fun with it. My issue with that is that because once you get to our stage, when you create, you're trying to achieve something and it sometimes you don't feel like you have time to have fun and jam. And I know that's important in the big scheme of things to enjoy it. Mm-hmm. But when I get my time, I feel like I have to do something that I can either release or, you know, people can play. I really feel like I have time to just sit there and jam and just come up with cool loops and then be like, okay, like totally. That would be really fun.
Yep.
But the product I get at the end of it, I can't do anything with. It's a really...
No,
you're frustrating.
You're on the money there. Like, I think I'm saying his name right, Casey Neistat.
Yep.
He just did a podcast with Jack Conti, who's another Launchpadder, mm-hmm. and he was talking about how he will not learn any other video editing software. He's in his lane. Like, that's he's in his groove. He doesn't want to learn new stuff. And I think you're right. There comes a time where there's this threshold of, do we really want to? Like, I wouldn't jump to Pro Tools.
Oh yeah,
I'd stay on Ableton for life.
Yeah,
but. I just thought, okay, so I've used lots of grid controllers. I just thought, okay, it would be the Push 2, but the newer model.
Yep.
Wasn't.
Yeah, what are your opinions on all of it?
So the most impressive takeaways of the Push 3, the first thing I didn't realize until about 2.5 hours into the session when they were like, oh, should we plug it into power? Battery operated.
Yeah, I didn't realize that as well.
Unreal.
Really impressive.
That's really impressive because if I'm on a tour bus or if I'm on a plane or if I'm in transit, whatever, or just on holiday, to whip this thing out and to make stuff and not have to think about how to plug it in, that is awesome. Number two, fail safe. If you're playing a gig and someone knocks the power, this thing's going to stay on.
Yeah, that's wild.
Awesome. It's like built-in redundancy.
Yep.
The other key takeaway that I thought was really impressive is that the pads themselves, it's almost like they've adapted the technology from using phones and touchscreens or whatever. Depending on where your finger is positioned on the pad, is dependent on what it then creates the sound, whether it's, you know, velocity sensitive or whether it's tuning an instrument. Like I played a guitar, a trumpet and a violin and it was freaking incredible. It sounded as though someone was actually playing a real instrument because you could humanize and actually make the sound evolve, which is something I haven't been able to do. And I was even laughing to the crew. I was like, this controller is so wasted on me. You know, I want max velocity and I'm just going to bash out some dubstep on it. But this thing I think will take people to the next level where, we could have a session guitarist in. I almost was going to message you and say, bring your guitar in so you could shred and I could play some Launchpad. We'll do that.
That's a good idea.
But I don't need you now. I'll get the Push 3.
Oh,
and I'll just play it on the, But this is the thing, right? For someone like me that can't play guitar, the guitars that we have here are all for show. Shout out, Mum, I've got your guitar. I could then try and play a guitar on these pads and depending on how I move and manipulate the buttons, it'll emulate the sound, which I thought was pretty epic.
One thing that also stood out to me is how you could just, it was wireless between your laptop and the and the hardware. So you could just drag samples onto your push without, there's no link between it. Yep. So that's
And they're fully really upgradable. Cool. The one that they brought was the prototype and then they did have a brand new one, which he unboxed as backup. But the prototype he was showing us on the Ramsey was flipping it over and he was like, you know, you can upgrade this in the future if it needs more RAM or if it needs whatever, bigger hard drives.
Yeah.
So that's cool to think that the hardware, what you buy is, you know, you can adapt it for the future. That's pretty cool.
Another good thing that he displayed for us was like he put in a turntable, like a record.
That's right. We had a vinyl turntable.
Yep. And then he would sample it directly onto the push and then manipulate everything
it
from there.
It auto-quantized. It had all the warp markers already. Yeah. So that was using Ableton 11.
Okay.
Shout out to Ramsey. We're going to get our license. Because for the longest time, I stayed on Ableton 10 and I could have definitely upgraded to 11, but I ghost produce for other people that are on 10. And once I save a project in 11, I can't send it to them, and it's not cross compatible. You can go up, you can't go back.
I feel like everyone's had their chance to catch up now, though.
I think
the buffer period's done. It's like, you're not on 11 now. That's up to you, man.
And I feel I really should have jumped up to 11. There's all sorts of vocal comping stuff that I can do on that I couldn't do. So that was a great event. It was also good just to test run what it's going to be like holding events. And Chief and I have been talking off camera for our community, what we're thinking of doing in the future. And there's two thoughts to this. One is that if you're local in Adelaide, we want to do like masterclass showcasing, and what I do on this podcast, like playing Launchpad, come along and see it for real.
Yep.
We're going to break apart projects. We're going to do sort of like almost like a panel where we can effectively get people that would have to go to United States and do camps overseas to do it here in Adelaide.
Yep.
And the second train of thought was to then film it and stream it and have people watch and tune in. So we'll have more thoughts to that. But for those listening at home, if you're a producer or aspiring producer or a vocalist or whatever it is, and you're interested in us showcasing an event where we can, it's effectively education, but it's way more fun. If you've got any thoughts, let us know, because we're going to start planning that and implementing that so that in like 3 months' time, we're actually doing it.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. I think we gave the studio a really good test run on Sunday and how it works with a lot of people in the place. And I think we learned a lot. And I think it's totally doable. Like, the room is so huge. Mm. We've got enough knowledge between us. I think we can easily handle a day.
Yep.
Figure out some merch, some giveaways, a raffle, you know, make it really worth it for people to come through. And I think just that, you know, like you said, the community, bringing people together. I think, yeah, a day course would be really a really good starting point. Mm. You can see what the interest is like, if it's something we can do ongoing, host them every so often.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
You probably figure out mentorship a bit as well.
Yep. Yeah, I had some clients in the studio yesterday, and one of the big takeaways from that, they were saying, because I was doing a mix down for them and a little bit of co-production just to finish the project off, they didn't realize some of the techniques I was using just to finish. There's like some formula.
Mm-hmm.
And I was saying, yeah, but I don't think there's a course for this stuff. I think you learn from just being in the room with other producers.
Yeah.
So I feel going forward, that's the secret sauce that I want other people to sort of be aware of moving forward when we do education.
Well, totally, man. I mean, like, there is no rule books with this type of stuff. Like, you can learn from the internet and teachers and stuff, but you also get thrown into the ocean by yourself for a long, long period of time.
Mm.
So you learn by yourself or through other people just in random encounters. Like, when we had Godlands in the studio the other day, I'd see something on a project and be like, what is that? What are you doing there?
Yeah, exactly.
And maybe you pick up something from each other.
Totally. Godlands is overseas now, Tomorrowland.
Yeah, she would have left on her flight today. Awesome. I sent her a track. Hopefully she gives it a run. I'd love that.
Oh, that's footage. So we'll get Godlands back to talk about Tomorrowland.
Yeah, she's going to have a crazy time, man. She's got a couple months over there. Start in Europe, go America.
That's right.
Living the dream, really. Dream. Be good fun.
All right, speaking of overseas, what's going on in Hollywood? Because I have seen it on TikTok and Instagram, and correct me if I'm wrong. I saw something, and I'm not sure if it's the same or it's... Anyway, I saw that the... What do you call the actors in the background? The extras.
Would you like me to begin? They're background actors, basically.
Give me the rundown, because I'm a little bit confused, but I see this being an issue.
Yeah. Well, okay. So we're talking about the SAG-AFTRA strikes, which basically is... SAG-AFTRA is the union. Okay. For Hollywood
actors.
What does
SAG stand for? Screenwriters Actors Guild? Is that right?
Yeah, Screen Actors Guild.
Okay.
All right. So the reason I want to talk about it is because not only is it topical, but like you said before in the intro and just before, there's similarities between the filmmaking industry and the music industry. So I really want to get your thoughts on that, because I know you've got exposure to the top.
Yep.
And I think that's really interesting to discuss. What is SAG-AFTRA? Well, we're going to refer to them just as SAG from now on, but they're a labor union representing about 160,000 media professionals worldwide. So they're based in LA. You could essentially group them as a large portion of the Hollywood actors and writers.
Yep. Okay.
So on the 14th of July, about a week ago, the union officially went on strike for the first time since 1960, which includes all the actors and the writers just completely stopping work. So the reason for their strike is to try and agree on a new contract with like the big studios such as Amazon, Apple, Disney, Netflix, NBC, Universal, all of that, to protect the future of actors. So as of now, SAG members, so union members, will not show up to most scripted films or series until a new contract is agreed.
Wow.
effectively shutting down Hollywood for the interim. So this includes award shows, premieres, film festivals, all appearance of the like will be basically off limits until if depending on how long these strikes last.
Yep.
So now the big talking points. What are they? Why are they striking? What are they trying to achieve in the new contract? So there's two major issues. One is the lack of residuals as a result from streaming. Right. So we all in the music industry know completely what that's like. You know, we're doing all the groundwork, putting the content up, and then you get no payoff as it happens.
We also don't know, and we'll go into this after, we don't know what the royalty rate actually is.
Well, all I can say is that I only got a brief window of time to research it, but it was very low numbers for these actors as they would perform in these big hit shows that would then be aired on Netflix. People stream them as many times as they want.
Yep.
And their residual check would come through and it's like, you know, under $100, $30, $2. Yep. Like for people who are playing a massive part in these series, that is no return. How are you supposed to survive in that industry where work isn't always available? You've done something.
This sounds like Spotify.
100%, man. And that's what I think is why I was like, this is
very
close to the music industry. Like you put a track on Spotify, you get 0.04 cents a stream.
Right.
So like, I know I'm getting low stream numbers, but you said it really well in an episode before about you and Facebook. Like they give you the platform, but you give them the content. So it's like, but there is no return for you.
Mm-hmm.
So
I'm also paying a Spotify membership.
Exactly, man. So yeah, streaming is something that they're trying to iron out and I can foresee it happening within the music industry as well. It's just not okay where it's sitting at the moment.
Yeah.
It's really hard though. You can't bump numbers up to 1 cent a stream. Like then where the hell are they going to pull that money out of?
Yeah.
But there just needs to be some sort of either increase or middle ground or something.
Yep.
Anyway, I wouldn't be surprised to see it in the near future. But the second one, and what you were just almost going to touch on earlier before I cut you off. Sorry, I feel like I did that last episode.
No, you're good.
In the Taylor Swift one as well, Luke would say something about ticket prices. And I was like, hold on. But all a part of it.
You get it out, mate.
So the concerning one is that studios want to use AI to eliminate background acting jobs by scanning and creating digital likeliness to use in perpetuity without fair compensation.
Mm-hmm.
So to break that down into simple terms, just in case I butchered that, the studios proposed that they want to be able to pay background actors for one day of work, scan the actors, and then their company should own that scan, their image and likeliness, and be able to use it for all of eternity in any project they want with no consent or compensation.
That's terrifying.
Absolutely. So we're not talking about lead roles here yet. But it's certainly, you know, you just start with the background guys and then slowly it all leaks into the next thing.
I'm surprised they're even needing to do the whole meta mask, meta human because deep fake, we know that there's a really famous TikToker who looks like Tom Cruise.
Mm-hmm.
It's not Tom Cruise.
Yeah.
So I worry about our kids, right? The next generation, because here's the thing. If someone had the technology, like we can do motion cap here at the film studio and we can do, like there are apps you can get on your phone where you can scan body parts, whatever, you can scan a whole person, you can scan an image, a room, whatever, and recreate it virtually. Then you can go into a free program like Blender, add some nodes, and then you can basically create a skeleton and move the object around. Like it's the tech's there and it's freely available. What I worry about is people using someone else's likeliness in an exploitative way. You know, it's not hard to set up a TikTok with what looks like a virtual human and then have a paywall to an OnlyFans where who knows what they're doing with that form. That's a totally different topic, but it will come about from the exploitation, right? As an artist, nobody had, this is a tricky one. I signed an exclusive record deal, an artist deal, to a record label and a publishing company, which meant that not the M4Sonic moniker, but me as Nick, me personally, could not write for anybody else unless I had permission to do so. You know, so consent of the publisher or the label.
Mm-hmm.
And that they owned the intellectual property. I'm talking about in my head, not so much what the record was, the printed copy, like anything.
Yep.
And this got me into huge trouble. So I would have rappers come to the studio and they'd be like, what does it cost to make a beat? And I'd be like, look, in consideration of the publishing deal and who I'm signed with, X amount. And they're like, whoa, that's so much. You know, I'm like, okay, I understand that you don't see the value in it, but that is how much I would charge because of my intellectual property. And they're like, what are you talking about? The rapper is writing the music. I'm like, up, 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 up. No, I am also writing the music. Like, you're not writing the lyrics. I'm like, no, writing, it's a broad term. The writing component was the, you know, what did the strings do? What notes?
You know,
I'm not getting out a quill and writing a crotchet in the bass clef, right? But it effectively, when I'm even the MIDI,
yeah,
the composition, and I've had to explain this, and this again, this is why I want to put on events and through the podcast as well. I want to educate artists to know about their rights.
Mm.
When you compose something, even if you didn't physically hand write it, you have technically written music. And when you sign an exclusive artist agreement with a record label or a publisher, they give you a decent payout to, you know, like it's called an advance on income to effectively buy into your IP. It's now their intellectual property. And I'll have to check with Luke as to how much I can talk about this. And it might be another episode as to where I'm at currently.
Mm.
But getting out of those deals is really difficult. So what I worry about in Hollywood right now is, say you have an Ariana Grande in the Disney phase, hasn't turned into superstar level yet, but in the Disney phase, yep, and is on the up, and they scan her MetaMask, her
yep,
well, I've just come up with that term.
Likeliness.
Likeliness. And then you could be used in a game without permission. You could be having all these multiple Instagram accounts and no control.
So scary.
It's a scary thing and I'm wary of it. But I've also noticed, you know, the latest Avatar was incredible.
And that's no, yeah, you couldn't tell who's really acting in there.
It's nuts. The technology's there to do basically anything, right?
Yeah. I mean, that stuff looks awesome. I guess it's a bit different because they're not portraying humans. But
yeah,
it just is, it's very worrying. I mean, already, like you said, with those TikTok accounts and stuff of like fake Tom Cruise, I've seen fake Elon Musk and that. It's going to become very scary to know that what you're looking at,
yeah,
will not be real.
We even have,
it's only, so you can, if you look at where the technology is now, it's not going to get any worse. It's only going to get better.
Yeah.
And knowing that is very, very scary when you're talking about phones and, yep, and how the way we consume content these days, everything is just going to become, is this real? Is this not?
I was wondering even if they needed to use actors in future movies. Will it all just
create a face?
Well, you know, take someone's likeliness and mm-hmm, have the stunt double perform.
Yeah.
And then deep fake the face on. That's
what we're getting here. So we're talking about background actors.
We're not talking about the lead cast.
Exactly. We are talking about, so background actors are non-speaking roles in the back of the scene. But what is so vital about that role is that, you know, that gets a young actor on a set,
yep,
networking in the industry. You never, like, you can see clips of famous actors in the background of sets from shows 10 years prior.
Sure.
Like, it's a stepping stone into the industry. So if you just went, all right, Nick, come through, we're going to scan you. All right, here's $200. See you later, mate. Mm-hmm. And then that's it. You never get another call for a job in your life.
Yeah.
Or like, that's where your introduction to the industry ends.
Yeah.
And then they start using you in the background of all these coffee shop scenes. And you're like, man.
What if they put you in a military uniform fighting a war that you like your family and your religion was just totally so against?
Yeah.
So
it's a very tricky thing. I respect them for kind of putting their foot up and being like, no, this is not okay. Like, and it's not. That at that point, you're going over the top.
If I can draw some comparisons to the music industry, exclusive artist agreements with record labels still exist today, but the publishing agreements have changed. I know the one that I signed has changed massively, so that essentially what artists are doing now is they're signing the rights to a composition, not all intellectual property for perpetuity,
yep,
of the universe. You,
yeah,
know, it's just this. This is what this company, okay, can now represent on my behalf and do what they like, but just that, not all of me. So
yeah.
Global League, the record label, we only do individual contracts per record.
Yep.
We don't do artist agreements. And so the artist used to get really bummed because the artist is like, oh, I've signed to a record label. And we, you know, sometimes we'd sort of play on that a little bit like, yeah, yeah, you've signed to Global League. No one's actually,
yeah,
even I am not signed to Global League because we couldn't offer any advance. We just, yeah, didn't have the budget for it. And then because of that, we didn't really have the ad spend, the marketing, all that sort of stuff. So as a, we were just trying to provide a platform for artists so that they were not, I mean, they can do it themselves now. Everybody can self-distribute. But the idea was that we were a music company that would have a little bit more than just distribution.
Yep.
And the key artists that we have on the label, when I say on the label again, I'm using old lingo. They can still sign to any other label they want. Like take VOE for instance.
Yeah.
Luke and I took two individual artists, Caroline, Kazi, and Tom, Tevlo, and they were collaborating so often. We're like, guys, I really think you should do something together. They thought about it. They came back. They had all these names. We chose, we're going to get them on the podcast.
Got yeah, once they come back too, for
we're
sure. Like,
we're going to throw everything we can behind this. We got the VOE project started. We got some kick-ass remixes, helped with artworks, helped with like setting it all up, and it just went bonkers. And then a UK label, I think Viper is the name of the label.
Correct.
Reached out and they're like, we love what you guys are doing. What's your deal with Global? And they're like, "What guys, what do we do? I'm like, go for it.
Mm.
As opposed to, nope, we own the rights to you and everything you do moving forward and you can never do anything ever again. Because that just absolutely cripples artists.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, every release I've had has always just been a single release with labels. It's, they're an interesting one because, yeah, you get really excited about it. And it is always a great opportunity, but it's never life-changing, really.
Well, it's a short shelf life if the record doesn't pop. And that's yeah. so not to do with the quality of the record label. It can just do with bad timing. You could build a massive press release and have everything ready to go and then a natural disaster takes place and everybody's attention just is on that. Like you never know. There's just so many different factors.
Mm-hmm.
Also, again, this comes down to your Taylor Swift TikTok blowing up. What content works is what the platform wants to work, not yep. pushing a JPEG of your song and trying to get people to leave platform to listen. It's so difficult. So when you're doing a single with a label, the label probably isn't as invested as if they own the rights to you indefinitely, because then they can do radio campaigns, they can help with touring, they have so much depth and so and a longer time frame to recoup the cost and the investment.
Yeah. It's a much different relationship than just being like, we like that track, we're going to release it for you, and now it's done.
And now it's done. Yep.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think we've covered a lot, quite a lot, because I wanted your, you know, AI is obviously very topical at the moment, but do you think it's ever going to be able to leak into the music industry?
Yes. I'm working with another company at the moment. And again, I'm not sure how much I can say. So this, we'll come back to this in later episodes where effectively in the metaverse, you can collect stems or parts of songs of your favorite artists and with AI recreate those songs into your own, like say someone who's not musical or not able to mm-hmm. use software or whatever, they can be assisted with AI to create some cool stuff. I think AI is going to play a major role in optimization, but I don't think it'll ever be creative.
Yeah.
And if it was, it's still programmed by a creative.
Yeah. Well, is there much difference between manipulating loops to what you were saying about getting stems and arranging them? Is that not similar?
It's randomization. I mean, so I use AI in mastering.
Yeah.
And that's to help me with some of the nodes of the room that maybe aren't, you know, like representing the bass as well as it okay. should. So AI can help just in like in terms of the spectrum. We can look at sort of all the key parts of the mix that maybe aren't working and right. can identify like, hey, whatever. But again, that's still just like numbers. And so I've used AI a little bit.
Yeah.
Sometimes it gets it really wrong. So I'd never rely on it. I'd never just chuck something on something and say,
yeah, it's analyze, definitely not at that stage. Yeah. It's always going to use that a human element still.
AI can't do what I'm about to do on this launchpad, which is going to be random. It's going to be human. There's going to be mistakes. It's going to be, yeah, it just can't. And I'll be very interested to know where the future of music's going, because I hope that people don't rely on it so heavily that, this is another topic for another day. We're not getting bored. Now, this is a big topic.
Okay.
We're not getting bored. We're not taking the time off social media or the time away from work or the time away from activities to actually be bored. And that is what has provoked creativity in humans. Being like, oh.
Got nothing else to do.
Nothing else to do. Why don't I draw something?
Yeah, we spoke about that with someone at the end of the event and I really related, because I was supposed to use 2 hours to do something before the event. I just sat there on my phone because that was enough to fulfill me in that time rather than I'm so bored, I have to go to the computer and do something.
Correct. So what I worry is that if we have too much artificial intelligence in our lives, will we be pushing ourselves or will we just be copping out?
Well, we'll see how it all evolves over time. I think we'll see what happens with these strikes too. They're going to have to come up on some agreement soon. And it just seems like the studios are just these big bullies.
Well, look, Adele did it somewhat with Spotify. She pulled her album off.
Yeah. I mean, Taylor did it with her label as well. She just went and re-recorded all of the songs.
Yeah, that was interesting. That was Scooter Braun who's…
Her manager or something at the time? Or was it her?
I don't think so. I think his company bought the catalog. What a
douche name. Scooter.
Scooter. So Scooter is Justin Bieber, Ariana Grande's manager, a few others. He's got some big players. And I think his company bought the master recordings. He owned the rights to that music and then all the control. So then Taylor went and re-recorded the second versions, which you can do. I am contemplating doing it too. Mm. And took the power back and the fans got around it, which is just phenomenal. That's so cool. But yeah, this all comes down to knowing your rights. And for the longest time, I think artists got seduced with the money, the fame, the hype. They were pressured in my personal experience with certain companies, not suggesting my label or publisher, but in certain…
Right. You get approached by someone and you think, this is it.
You're going to sign now or this is a done deal. You're going to do this or you're going to walk away. It's like, oh, okay, I better jump on this when didn't have to. I had all the power. You need to define your success. You need to define what is making it so you understand that signing to a record label, signing to a publisher, signing to this, signing to that, or getting a million streams, that is not success.
When you mentioned it at the start of the episode saying like people think they've made it, I think we were talking about TikTok. I was thinking that it's like as I've gotten older and matured and met you guys and like my definition of making it or success completely different to what it might have been 5-10 years ago where I was like, I'm going to be the best DJ in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
Probably not what I like. If that were to happen, great.
Yeah.
That's an awesome avenue. But if I could find success in many other ways, I would happily take that as well. So it's, about adjusting those goals and hopes.
We're talking about goal setting and making it. We're talking about burnout.
Yeah. So I think that we discussed before, we were going to do a follow up on our challenges.
Mm-hmm.
And
what was yours?
Mine was to just stretch every day.
Oh, yeah. And I've seen in the group chat, you didn't take any photos. I have no way.
I'm glad you didn't. Pajama thing on the floor the TV. It's not very aesthetic. Yeah, you can just trust me.
I trust you.
And I did do it every day.
And what was Luke doing? He was doing weird
shoulder rehab stuff. I don't know how he went with that. Can't follow him. I trust you would have done all right.
He sent one.
I think first night he did a video. I did well. It turned out to be pretty good. I feel quite a lot better. It's always just my lower back's really tight.
It's your hamstrings, mate.
That's the stretch. Don't worry. I've been stretching a lot. Yeah. Hammies, calves. And then I went and played basketball and just made everything sore again. But it's all good. I think that I'm going to continue that. I'm not going to stop stretching. I really want to maintain that.
You also played a gig recently and I didn't ask how that went.
Yeah, we played at the Beer and Barbecue Festival on Saturday, which was interesting. Well, I DJed for an artist of mine that I record and produce for and we're in a wrestling ring.
Did you stretch?
I did before. It was actually a lot of fun. I used to love like WWE wrestling as a kid. So like,
is it real or is it fake?
It's a both. I mean, they're taking real hits, but it's obviously all scripted. So, but they're, entertainers in their own right. And what they do is really physical. So I have respect for them. I don't want to hate on them at all. I really enjoyed it as a kid. Anyway, I've always wanted to get in a ring. Like who wouldn't want it? So to get into one was so fun. And I was like thinking like, oh, how do I get in the ring? Do I go over the top rope, like the Big Show or I slide in like Rey Mysterio? Just did the standard like through the middle rings one leg at a time, like dipped in.
Pulled your hemi.
Nah.
Rolled in.
But I was like the first in the ring too. So I was like, better not fuck this up. but it was actually great fun. At one stage we had like, Perry's really good, Sacred, artist name. And like, she loves to bring any features, artists. She gives opportunity to people to come and perform with her, which I think is really respectable. Like, so she had a few people come and feature in the tracks. And at one stage, there was 5 people in the ring. And I don't know if you know this about like a wrestling ring, but those things are bouncy as fuck.
Yeah.
So I'm in the back. I've got 5 people jumping around. I've got a bottle of water open next to me. And the deck's just like, and I'm like guys, fucking relax here.
Holy shit.
Yeah, everything was all right. Luckily, whoever, you know, set up the table understood that and things needed to be secured, but it was a bit scary at that moment. And the audio setup was really rough. I couldn't hear what she was saying and we had freestyled the set a bit and I was like, do you want me to play the next song? Because it's very much touch and go with that, with her. So, but overall, really, really fun. I had some delicious barbecue as well, which was like the cherry on top. And then, yeah, it's really, really fun.
Nice.
Yeah, it was good to kind of light the fire. I get a bit like jealous up there because I'm like, I fucking wish I could just play all my music right now. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
And
that's how I feel every time I go to a club or festival. I'm like, ugh.
Yeah, it was difficult. I was secretly hoping the chick who was supposed to DJ after me just wasn't going to rock up or something. I was like, I wish I have to be like, oh, we've got like 15 minutes. She's still not here. I'll be like, fuck it. I'll just throw down a random set with whatever I've got.
You should have done a WWE SmackDown and just now, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I would have loved to get on the top rope, but we'll say that for next time. So, yeah, that was good to get in a little energy kick just to try and re-motivate me. But
hell yes.
I feel like on the other side of the table, you're suffering from a bit of burnout at the moment and there's just so much going on with your life and your personal life, with the studio, with your project, trying to, you know, handle all these new clients and stuff. I really sympathize for you, man, because I can totally understand how much you've got going on at the moment.
I don't want this to be the podcast where Nick sets himself a challenge and then just fails every week. So my challenge was to go to the gym.
Yep. How'd that go?
Well, I've just burnt a month's membership now.
It's been like 3 weeks, right? Yeah.
And I haven't gone. Now, I'm not making excuses. This is just the reality of goal setting. I onboarded some new clients, some major projects here at the studio, which was fantastic. Came with lots of added complexities. And then we've had events here, which then needed the space to be ready for that. Literally the day after we had the Ableton event, we had the photo film studio's first day booking. So I was on the tools repainting the entire place. And I've got burnout. I feel fine right now talking to you, but I reckon probably an hour before we said we were going to meet today, I was ready to pull the pin. I didn't sleep last night and I didn't sleep the night before that. And what's happening, I don't know if anybody else can relate to this. Sometimes when I feel depressed, but I don't have depression, but when I feel depressed, I get like physical symptoms, one of which is cloudy vision. So I can only see you and like my peripheral is just so dark. It's bizarre. Like, but right now I'm okay. I seem to have perked up. Caffeine's kicked in, whatever. But also I get analysis paralysis and I wanted to ask the audience, there's overwhelmed and underwhelmed. Is there just whelmed?
You're just floating in the middle.
Because that's where I feel like I'm in right now. I'm a perfectionist, which means that everything I have like such high critical expectations of myself and everybody that I'm constantly let down, not just in my own endeavors, but in other people's. And it's almost like pessimistic and I need to really change my headspace, but I'm aware of it. It's not like I'm just always angry at the world. Like I realize that it's probably because of low energy, not drinking enough water, not exercising, not prioritizing nutrition and sleep and everything, but I'm prioritizing the thing that I think at the moment is most crucial, which is cash flow, clients, client relationships, having the building and venue and the facility working. And I think anybody that's an entrepreneur or like chasing their dreams will go for. The funny thing is it's completely stopped the M4 Sonic project because originally, and everybody knows my backstory now, I was a subtenant at a photo studio hoping to have a space for myself while I wasn't touring to record vocalists and make launchpad videos. And then when I had to take over the entire building and built the business that we have today, we're repping the merch. Woo, love it. You know, the making it term, like I'm making it, like things are working,
yep.
But it's actually like the course delineation. I've gone off onto this like side venture and it's cruel when I try and think of what I should or aspire to be doing and think of all the things that are roadblocking that. But they're all self-made. The other thing that I think is crippling me a little bit, and I've only just come to terms with this morning, is that in 6 weeks, I have 6 more podcast episodes before child number 2. And I have no idea what I'm in for.
Yeah.
Like I know what it's like with a toddler.
But now it's double.
And so I had an opportunity to play a show. I had a couple of opportunities that one I've turned down to go overseas, and another one was locally. And fortunately, the crew that I'm organizing the show with, we're going to push it back a month. So, because unfortunately, the day of the show was the day we were
due date.
And he was like, I could like leave for an hour and whatever, but no. So there's lots of, it's almost like your computer running at full CPU. And Rach is always like, just, you know, take small steps. What's the next thing you need to chip off? And I'm doing that. But at the end of the day, after chipping off all the small steps, it's like, oh, I should go to the gym. And I'm like,
nothing there.
Nah, but I don't want to be a hypocrite because I give so many people advice where I'm like, oh, you're not feeling great. You know, it's environment. Like, when was the last time you got grounded and or went into nature, went into a forest, went into the beach, got some fresh air, got some vitamin D? Like, I am always lit by artificial light. Like, I know that I am the reason that I'm in this like little rut. And it's a good problem to have. So
it's just tough to navigate out of because I can see how your workload is so huge. It's like, I don't think a lot of the people, especially like clients, understand that not even half the job is done by the time you walk out of this building.
That's right. Well, even as we record this podcast episode, I am late to posting our last episode.
Exactly.
Because I haven't actually edited it yet.
I'm going to crack the whip on you.
That's today's task. After today, after I've sufficed the clients.
So that's what I mean, man. Like, I really understand, and it's going to be a very interesting time for you going forward, how you're going to be able to manage all this stuff. You know, I'm here to support you and help you as much as I can, man. So,
thanks, bro. I've worked out it's just time optimization and prioritizing. So and maybe, you know, perfection kills me massively. Good is good enough. Yeah,
man. Yeah, I think there's a lot of process things that you can iron out over time. You got to learn from when these people are presenting you problems. I don't know if you're writing things down or whatever. You got to make sure that the next person that walks in that door, you don't get hit with them. But it's a learning process. Like, you don't have anyone to ask.
No. Oh, I was just saying that to Rach this morning. I was like, some of the problems I have, even right now, I'm trying to back up 40 terabytes of video. And like naming protocols, file organization, where is it stored, what backup is on, what cloud server have we put it on, all this stuff, things like we've got a server in Canada that we send stuff to, but it's so slow. By the time I've actually uploaded something to that cloud server, it's been weeks. Like, it's too slow. I need my own. We're going to get a NAS here eventually. But I was like, I didn't study this. Nobody's been in here. I haven't worked at another studio where they've had all this done. You know, and so again, collaboration is key. You don't know what you don't know. So I need to get out and find out.
I was going to say, are you able to reach out to maybe some other studios and just be like, look, man, I'm not trying to, can we just like, trying to leverage, I just need to talk. Yeah. You know, I'm not going to try and steal your clients and stuff.
Yeah.
I understand that we're in the same lane, but I just want a coffee.
Yep.
And just talk to you and maybe you can just help me with a few things. I'll fucking buy a lunch and prove that this is a human-to-human interaction, not someone who's trying to leech your game plan.
The other thing I'm going to do is that I'm, as I get myself out of this rut, I'm documenting everything and building a system and I'm going to make an ebook and I'm going to give that away for free. So anybody that has like similar personality traits or has ever found it difficult to whatever or is interested in how I run this ship, we talked about the ship analogy.
Yeah.
I'm going to give away the map.
Can I ask you a question? Throughout all this stuff, as you're gaining clients, as you're doing new podcasts, are you writing things down?
Mm-hmm.
Are you writing down all your problems? Mm-hmm. Are you writing down when clients mess you around? And
no.
Start writing that stuff down.
No, it's like, okay, dude,
Not to get off your mind, but to make it so that by the time the next dude comes in, you don't fall for the same stuff. I know mentally you're keeping track of it all.
Yeah.
You know, you were just telling me about what happened when the guys came in the other day.
And changed the goalposts.
That cannot happen again.
Yeah.
So I really, you know, I know it's so easy for me to just sit across the other side and just be like, oh, yeah, just take the 20 minutes a day. You're obviously fucking packed. I understand that. But I don't know. I'm just trying to offer help. And I think Rach's approach as well is really great. You know, you list what can you just chip away at and stuff. Yeah. But I think, some self-preservation to make sure that you don't get messed around is really important to hoping that when you get new clients and stuff, it's as smooth as it can be.
Totally. One of the things about being a service provider is parking your ego. So you have to like separate. Okay, I'm just going to go park my ego over here because it's going to get really offended at the way I'm being treated. And I'm just going to be a service provider and get the job done for the benefit of the company, for the benefit of my family.
Yeah.
But People can wear you down, but yeah, that's okay. First world problems.
It's all right. We'll get there, man.
Yeah. Life's good, by the way, for everybody listening. And life's really good. I'm just, if I was a battery, I'd be running at like 10%.
Yeah.
But that's my problem. Like I could maybe step out and go plug myself in and charge, but it's just,
I think it's just hard doing for this you little to step away, man.
And that's a really great place to be in with business. When you're at the point where you're at capacity, you're at the threshold and it's like, okay, now it's time to employ someone. Now it's time to like whatever. Now it's like, oh, okay, well, how would I train someone up? I need like procedures and all this sort of stuff, blah, 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 blah. Even when we were setting up the podcast today, I was like, oh, I'd be so good if someone could do this.
Yeah, exactly. You just rock up and sit down.
We will get there, ladies and gentlemen. We will get there.
Play us a tune.
Play us a tune. All right. So yeah, we talked about the push and I've got the Mark something 2 or 3 Pro Novation launchpad here. The project I'm going to play though, I built on a different launchpad. So I'm understanding now that I don't have a problem with components, which is the software that runs this particular launchpad.
Yeah.
It's that I was building my projects on other systems and then expecting it to just work.
Okay.
But yeah, let's just freestyle it. So if you're not watching, I have a launchpad in front of me. For those watching, got a different camera angle. We've got 2 camera angles going. And there's some bass therapy sessions on YouTube and I just randomly pulled one up before the episode and I'm going to freestyle it. The good thing about this is that I've got a live show that I want to do soon. And I was starting to panic again, analysis paralysis. When I DJ and then I stop and I just play these projects, the launchpad looks exactly the same no matter what the project is. Yep. How for the life of me am I going to remember what the sequencing is?
Right.
But the strange thing is there's this muscle memory that kicks in as soon as I hear the samples where my brain just goes, oh yeah, I remember sort of where everything is. And it happens. But it's a bizarre, weird thing. I don't even know what this is called, this project. But it sounds something. I'm going to make lots of mistakes. But it sounds something like this. And that's easy because it's just long hold.
Yeah. And the chords are under that, actually.
Yeah. So this is where I try. Oh, I can't talk and play at the same time. This is where I try to remember what's the next sequence. Yeah. That's why I have these breakdowns. Oh, yeah, I remember.
Wow, I'm just blown away every time. And I love how you're like, oh, I might make some mistakes here. Oh, boom, straight in.
Yeah, no, I'm just going to get the hardest thing about these videos was like that breakdown. I was like, what comes after that? Because I do know there was another section.
I can't wait to clip that because you're like, I don't know what goes with that. Oh, yeah, I've got it.
Yeah, it's just a lot of fun. So when I do my live show, I'm actually thinking about getting on the mic and be like, okay, yo, what's up? Hold up the launch pad. I did this on Warped Tour and it was fun because by the end of the tour, I'd played that many shows that to keep it interesting, you know, whatever. Yeah, but the great thing I think about this particular project, it was later in the series of when I was making these projects and I started making it easier for myself.
Yeah.
So I'm like, even if I hit the wrong button, it's going to sound good. Oh, no. And then this is, okay.
Yeah, I know you're back. Oh, that white one down there. Okay.
If I hit the wrong button, Novation. this is just some, now I can't get back into custom mode. So I have to unplug the damn thing, plug it back in. So this is just some feedback. Like, it's a great device. Like, I love it. But I'm a bit sloppy and I make mistakes.
Can you disable those buttons or something?
Look, probably. Probably. Yeah. I just haven't spent enough time familiarizing myself with this tech to do it. But, oh, it's fun. It's good fun getting back into
Still
it.
Still got it, man. That one's filthy too. Jeez. Very heavy, that one.
When are we going to collaborate? We should do something where I like, oh, we're going to talk about this in another episode about what does the fox say? But that is literally
that's Crazy Frog. Sorry.
Ring didn't have anything to do with that one.
Very close.
What happened was I was in, this is the brief condensed story. We'll go into it later. I was in a studio session with Stargate and I had my launch pad and I had a project called Virus. And Virus just had some chords, you know, like, see, now it's not playing. Damn, I was going to play some chords. It was four buttons on the launch pad and I was playing them in all these sequences. And one of the guys, Mikel, was like, all right, let's just record these sequences. So I started recording all these sequences, different tempos, different arrangements, whatever, all using the Virus sample pack. And then they're genius. They took these big super chunks of patents and created new original music from it. And I didn't know about it.
Yeah.
So we're going to talk about that in another episode. However, you and I should collaborate where I take samples from some of your records, some of my records, build some other custom stuff. I do my thing. We track it in Ableton. And then we go in and post-produce it.
Wow.
And create it into a collaboration. I think that'd be really cool.
Sounds insane.
Okay, so we hope you've enjoyed today's episode. If you have any questions, please reach out. We're pretty good on Instagram direct messages.
Yeah,
pretty,
for sure, man.
Pretty hopeless on the YouTube comments. I do need to spend some more time getting back to people. I will. But as you can tell from this episode, finally spread. And apologies. I don't know if these episodes are going to come out consistently every week. It's going to be every 7 to 10 days, we do what we can. And anyway, we look forward to seeing you next time.
See ya.